Welcome to the Create and Grow podcast. This is Janine Ledford, your host and creator of the groundbreaking concepts of intercultural creativity and prismatic leadership. These concepts focus on the integration of creative thinking and cultural development while preparing your leaders for the future of work. So if you're looking for new, exciting ways to build a positive culture of curiosity, inclusion, and belonging that sparks creativity, this is your place. And it's all based on brain science. We have exciting guests on this show in various fields such as neuroscience, education, the arts, and business who highlight how creative thinking thrives in a culture of diverse collaboration. At the Create and Grow podcast, you'll discover how inclusion drives innovation, especially when you have an arts-infused foundation. Now, enjoy the show. Welcome to the Create and Grow podcast. It is Janine Ledford, your intercultural creativity keynote speaker and prismatic leadership creator and a founder. And I'm so excited to be here once again, bringing you the top creative ideas with the top creative minds. Today, we have Ms. Jennifer Bittinger, and she comes from us from Narrativa. With 20 years of experience in tech, media, marketing, and public relations, Jennifer brings a wealth of knowledge and skills in leadership, helping brands grow to their highest potential. Utilizing her experience with digital marketing, demand generation, data reporting, and brand development. Jennifer now serves as the president of Narrativa, one of the fastest growing artificial intelligence, an area that I'm always excited to learn more about. One of the fastest growing areas in AI. She specializes in automating transformative content such as articles, white papers, I know I've read a lot of those, and reporting for multiple industries, including media, marketing, gaming, finance, and life sciences. She's worked with a plethora of well-known organizations as a multifaceted VP of marketing and branded content. And she served Entertainment Tonight. These are the plethora of organizations. Dr. Phil, Cesar Milan, TBS, Hulu, OWN, San Francisco Giants, Chevron, ExxonMobil, and more. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. Sorry, that sounds so long when you have to read it. I should have shortened that bio. Thanks, Janine. Thanks. It's great to be here with you today. Thank you.
I just love to show the world our genius, our ideas, and just the way that we approach different issues. If you can kind of give people a little bit of background about where you are now and a little bit of the journey of how you got to be there.
Thank you. Thanks, Janine. Yeah, it's just, I love that how, especially as women, not that men are bad. I love having powerful, wonderful men around me who many have shaped me, including my own husband. He's a great businessman and he's even helped shape me to who I am today. But I think as women, we bring so much to the table that is different, but also complementary to what men can bring to the table. And I think it's something that we really need to embrace and not be ashamed of. I know just a little bit of my background. So I was raised in a small town called Kent, Ohio, where Kent State University is near Akron. I was one of three kids in a preacher's home. So I was the youngest with two older brothers. I tried to keep up with them, playing football, everything. But it was a wonderful environment. I grew up in a very safe environment, but I always just had this burning passion inside me just to do something bigger. Not that my town was wrong or not fun. I loved Kent. It was a great town. But there was just something in me said, wherever there are movers and shakers, I want to be part of that. Mm-hmm. And I want to be part of the good movers and shakers, those who are trying to help people. Ever since I was a child, I always had this deep desire in me to help others. And whether that was in media, helping to put together a show that featured stories about leukemia survivors, or whether it was I worked with Oprah Winfrey Network and we, just told powerful stories. At times I was just literally behind camera, just crying during a show. For me, it was like, how am I helping people today? whatever it is, whether I am working on a data sheet, which is kind of boring at times, or whether I'm writing an article or I'm producing a show or having a one-on-one touch point call with an employee, how am I impacting people? Because at the end of the day, no matter what we do, it's always about people. And that's one of the cool things. My journey of working in media and entertainment and tech, I helped many brands grow over the years. But again, regardless of what I was doing, it always came down to relationships and people. And I believe that is number one, one of the key points to building a great brand. People need to know that your brand cares about them. And that's one thing that now I'm so glad I've learned over the past 20 years, not sharing my age, but but now that I've been with Narrativa since 2019, it was founded in 2015 in Madrid, Spain, by our founder and still CEO, David Llorente. He's Spanish, and about half of our team is Spanish, which I love, helps me practice my Spanish more. But I came into Narrativa through a mutual friend that David and I had. And he said, David said to me, he said, I want to bring Narrativa to the United States. It was one of the fastest growing AI companies in Europe, helping to automate, you know, articles for Wall Street Journal, Financial Times, Dow Jones, Infobae, and then also large media entertainment companies. And they were also kind of dabbling in automating reporting for finance and insurance companies. But he said, I really want to come to the United States and grow our brand. Mm-hmm. And our mutual friend said, well, I know just the gal. So when I met David, it was ironic. I had the same, he was just such a wonderful person to talk with. Very humble. I mean, really one of the most humble people I've ever met. The farthest thing from a micromanager, I think, I've ever known. But he was passionate about helping to bring AI automation, to use it for good, to help others, and to help not take people's jobs, but improve their jobs, right? To give them a little bit more time of their day back so they could go pick up their kids from school or go take a nap or go do yoga, whatever it is, just to help automate things a little bit faster. And so out of that, I came on board in 2019. And I said, okay, I'm going to help build this brand. And we have just taken off. And one of the great things for us is that, you know, all the fun buzz about ChatGPT and DALL-E and OpenAI the last year, year and a half has really helped us. Because before then, it was a struggle just to educate the market. People didn't even know what AI was. I mean, they looked at me like I was from outer space. They're like, okay. These are Star Trek or Star Wars, and we don't know who you are. We don't even know what you're saying. So at first, it was difficult to just even educate the market. But now, in the last 2 years, we've just seen it skyrocket, not only in media and entertainment, but now big time in pharma. And this is an area that kind of, I would say I love entertainment and I love media. It's always fun and creative. But when it comes to saving people's health and seeing, you know, babies who are being cured and people who are having leukemia being cured, I just, that pulls at my heartstrings. Maybe because I'm a mama. So it pulls at my heartstrings. And so it's been really a great journey. Now we are, for life sciences, we're now fully automating clinical trial regulatory documentation. With clinical trials, it takes on average 12 to 15 years to run one drug trial to get it from start, from research all the way to regulators, and on average $1.5 billion. That's the average. But now with our AI automation, we're seeing just even in the regulatory documentation part at the end of the study parts where they're running the trial with patients, we are actually shrinking the timeline by at least 65%. We're also reducing costs by 40%, which ultimately affects us as patients, right? The cost of pharmaceuticals. And we're seeing 100% data accuracy with AI. So this is incredible because now we can shrink that timeline to hopefully even 6, maybe 5, 4 years for a drug to get to market to help more people.
Wow, that's a lot there.
Yeah, so, I know. So yeah, that's kind of us in a nutshell, you know.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful narrative. Yeah, I love what you said about people looking at you like you're from outer space. And now, you know, there's a concept. My background's in psychology, and we talk about intercultural creativity, but the psychological aspect of, are people ready for the product? Or is the market ready, right? And they actually said that the idea of Uber was actually hit several years before, but the market wasn't ready about getting in strangers' cars. And there's no taxi sign on the side. But when Uber came out, the market actually had shifted. So timing is everything, right?
It is. It is everything.
And just looking at what AI is, how it's being a part of our everyday life. Like my son, I have a 5-year-old, and you know, his upbringing is going to be completely different than mine was, as mine was compared to my grandmother's upbringing, right? So with that, just that amount of shift, that amount of change, those are some big numbers. It's not like 5%, 7%.
I'm being very conservative on those numbers because we've had some clients already who've seen a 98% reduction in time and cost. So I'm being super conservative because I don't want to promise the world, you know, I don't want to overpromise, but I just had some phenomenal calls even this morning with several new biotech and pharma sponsors who are wanting to bring us on board to automate all their regulatory documentation. And they are finally seeing that this is not going to take their jobs. This is not going to take the jobs of medical writers. We need great medical writers. Mm-hmm. But guess what? There's a shortage. Just like the entire healthcare industry right now has a tremendous shortage of doctors, nurses, and medical personnel. So if we see that there's several great books out right now. In fact, I'll share one. I have this one that I share with people a lot right now. It's called The AI Revolution in Medicine. And I'll give you a screenshot. Maybe you can share it with friends, but it's by Peter Lee. And in this, it's all about GPT-4 and beyond. What we're seeing is like in medicine alone, 40% of the time for the workforce is spent on paperwork, including our doctors, right? When you go to a doctor, okay, let's say I go in for a checkup with a doctor or I'm feeling sick. He or she has to sit there, including the nursing staff, and they have to do so much paperwork. Now, we are human, and so we realize that we get tired. If you are a patient that sees the doctor in the morning at 9 a.m., your paperwork accuracy will probably be a higher percentage than the person who sees them at 5 p.m. or 8 p.m. that night. Mm-hmm. Now, the errors, right, the percentage of errors, it increases because we are human beings. So when you bring in a machine software like machine learning and AI, it actually can continue writing at the same pace and the same accuracy all day long and all night. So you don't have to worry about the higher risk of errors. Same thing for medical writers. They are human. They get tired. I mean, my eyes get tired all day on a computer. So they are going to make more errors as they're writing more and more of these medical, you know, patient narratives. So that's what we want to help with. We don't want to take them out of the equation. We want to just assist them. And I think that's where we're really seeing a lot of great change is that people now, the big aha moment has happened. Like you said, with Uber, I was one of those people who was so scared to get in someone else's car. So I'm with you. Like, I was like, I'm not getting a stranger's car. Yet, like, a taxi driver is a stranger.
I know.
Or she, you know, so, you know, in New York City or wherever. So eventually, you know, when they did put the safeguard, see, now this is interesting. Uber, when they put the safeguard in of, oh, I can share my ride with my husband or with my, you know, friend or my mom, knowing where I am. They tell you all the time, double check the license plate, right? There's safety measures set in place. So to help mitigate risk, but to also lessen any fears around adopting that technology. And that's what we've been trying to do more and more. So we have now put QC, quality control touch points within our platform, our generative AI platform, for the medical writing teams, the programmers, so that they have that opportunity to lessen their fears and say, wow, okay, 100% accurate, 100, you know, and it just affords them a much, I would say, a much better user experience. And that's what we want. We want it to be friendly, right? A no code experience. So it's friendly user experience for them. So they keep using it. Yeah. In their lives.
Yeah. That's good. And I love what you said about the, not about the taking of jobs. There's this concept called cobots, right? Like, yes, we get to create robots that work with us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my background or my study is in creativity, and really to get humans in the position of thinking more imaginatively with their creativity and allowing a lot of that data or just the elements that you were speaking of going to AI so we could really step into it in a more of a imaginative position. That's going to be huge.
Yeah. And once they have the robot that can fold my laundry and do all my dishes and clean my floor, I am buying one.
You are there.
I'm like, I need that robot.
That is awesome. So how is it like really talking about this? You mentioned it a little bit before really coming into the market shift and people finally understanding what AI are doing. But how is it like being a woman doing it? Really just, you know, helping set the stage, bring it to the States. I believe, I don't know if you were looking for like investors or doing the funding rounds or if you were just already here and ready to go. But what does that look like for our young women listeners who are looking for some inspiration?
That's a great question. I would say, well, for me, it's been a long journey being one of the fewer females, let alone first in media. So when I first started out in media, I worked for a short time in Major League Baseball. And I was the only female in a staff of 36 media personnel at one of the teams. But I grew up with brothers. I kind of grew up in a very male dominant, you know, environment. And I was like, okay, you know, I'm not going to let this stop me. And you just learn, and I tell this to young women all the time. I spoke earlier this year at Women in Tech Conference. And I always just say, listen, don't ever let anyone underestimate your abilities and what you bring to the table. Number one, because your abilities may look different than anyone else's, but they may be what someone needs, right? They could be something unique as you have, you know, really great people skills. You know, having powerful people skills and reading people is, I think, it's underappreciated in our world. For me, I am not a data scientist. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a PhD. And so when I'm dealing with people every day from large pharma, biotech, contract research organizations, these people are brilliant. I mean, they were the kids in high school who I was jealous of, who were in like AP biology. And, you know, like I was the kid who could write an essay, sing you a song, you know, and I loved history, but I was really a kid who struggled in math and science. Just, I think, because I was more afraid of it. I was good at it, but I was more afraid. And I let my fears control me and kind of narrow me down to a certain box of what I thought I should be. And now that I am in the world of data science and artificial intelligence and medicine, I mean, it's amazing because I have had to really clear away those boundary markers in my mind to say, oh, Jennifer, you can only go this far because you know you're not a physicist. You know you're not a computer programmer. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, now I gladly admit it. I am not. I am not any of those things. But if I need to figure out how to do something, I'm going to ask the right questions. I'm going to surround myself with the right people. That is key. So if I lack those skills, I'm going to find all the people who have those skills to surround me with. I hire some of the most brilliant data scientists in the world. I mean, literally, these people are amazing. And they don't like to speak in front of people. So they love it that I have to, you know, that I go out and champion for them what all the good things that they're doing. Mm-hmm. And so we complement one another. And that's what I would tell women. Don't, you know, I constantly encourage other women, don't say, oh, it's you versus me. You know, this is not a competition. This is about how can we do this better together? How can you, with your experience and background, complement my experience and background? And I have a big motto with my team at Narrativa is that we always have the highest level of respect for one another, regardless of our strengths and weaknesses. That is one of my number one priorities, is that you treat the golden rule, treat others as you would want to be treated. Even if you disagree, if they irritate you, whatever, you have to treat people with respect. And so it's been a real journey. I would say, well, going around like investors now, okay, so we'll get into this topic. We are currently in our Series A funding round. We just started 2 weeks ago. We just opened our data room. And we have around 60 investors wanting to be involved, which is fantastic. I think we're going to try and take advantage of this market right now that's very ferociously hungry for AI investments. And so we're going to try and take advantage of that. I mean, we're raising $10 million in the Series A. We've had people ask us, why aren't we raising more? I said, well, because I want to get sleep at night. Because the more money you raise, the higher your valuation, but then, you know, those investors are going to require you to hit bigger milestones, right? In your sales and in your business development. So I want to make sure my team isn't more stressed out than what they already are. So we're just raising this series A as $10 million, honestly, just to hire more people because we need a lot more people. And one of my biggest priorities is to hire diversity. I am 100% advocate for diversity. I think we need to see more women, more minorities in places of power and places of influence, and really as movers and shakers. So that's one of the big things I'm excited about for 2024 as we just close this Series A. Yeah.
That's exciting. As we get over on our side, we get ready to push out the Prismatic Leadership Program. It connects with that because it looks at the power of creativity connected to just, you know, diverse backgrounds, diverse experiences, and what that, like, what's the neuroscience behind really getting your teams geared up really to have that creative abrasion, yet that respectful abrasion to get some really great ideas out. So yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. Well, I'm excited for to really just jump into 2024. And even with just, you know, the instability of the workforce, the world, you know, there's a lot of things going on in the world right now that has people really thinking. One of the areas that we're looking at in our Prismatic Leadership Program is building not just resiliency, but regeneration. So how do you not just bounce back in an unstable workforce, but how do you bounce back and keep growing beyond, right? How do you regenerate? What are you doing for your team members to help them build that skill?
So it's interesting because I would say at this point, well, we are still small. I mean, Narrativa, we've been around since 2015, but you know, we have around 30 staff members worldwide. We're global. We all work remote. And so having to just regenerate, you know, new productivity, new creativity, even a new mindset of how we view each other, how we view our team members, but how we view our clients. Some of my team members have only ever been on they've never been on a client side. So they've only been on like a vendor side or servicing clients. And I told them, I had a really great, sometimes I have these great heart-to-heart talks on our staff meetings once a week. And I just said, okay, listen, imagine you're in a client office and your inbox not only gets 50 emails, now you're getting 100 emails a day. You have to try to answer all those emails, attend internal meetings, and then you have an outside salesperson constantly bombarding your inbox every 2 or 3 days or every week. And how are you going to think about that salesperson constantly bombarding your inbox? And they're like, oh, I probably wouldn't like it. It'd be very annoying, right? So I said, think of it in a relationship way. If you're dating, so I always use analogies. I love analogies. They're like my favorite thing. So I said, think of sales. I hate the word sales because for me, I always think of it, it's really relationship building. I have to build relationship. They have to trust me mm-hmm. with their money and with their brand and with, you know, with their budget, but also like their whole trajectory for their business. I mean, they have to really trust me. So this is a relationship that I have to build with this person. And it's like dating. It's like dating someone for a while. And then, okay, you put together a statement of work. Nah, it's getting closer to an engagement. Okay. And then when you sign that MSA, you're signing a contract. It's like getting married. And you, yeah, they have an out, right? They can cancel the contract. But you want to make sure that they truly trust you by the time that they get to that contract. If not, it will be short-lived. And we've had that happen. Mm-hmm. And I said, we have to make sure that we are showing the greatest respect to our client, even of their time, that we would want for our time. Mm-hmm. And so it's a give and take. So that's one of the areas that I think we're trying to always regenerate this mindset of relationships. But then even when it comes to creativity, I had a fun little exercise we did 2 months ago with my team. And in fact, I'm wearing the t-shirt today. It's like, I don't know if you'll see here, I'm going to show my shirt, but it's called AI for Bad Business Automation Deployment. And we did this fun exercise. You'll love this, Janine, because you're super creative. So the last year, everyone's been like, oh, let's use AI for good, AI for good. I like the sentiment. Yes, of course, we know what that means. But it's kind of the same thing over and over again. And I was like, we need to get some eyeballs. Okay. Attention. And I was presenting at a big pharma conference 3 weeks ago in Boston. And I had to have an opening video for my presentation, 30-second video. Mm-hmm. And so we put together a video, which is quite hilarious, of AI for Bad. And the song playing with the video was Bad by Michael Jackson.
Love it.
It was hilarious. I mean, people were like, oh my gosh. And pharma people especially were like, what? So all that to be like, let's get silly. Sometimes I think we're so serious. There's times to be serious, but sometimes it's fun. Get out of your box, get out of your skin and just say, you know what? Let's be a little funny. Let's just relax and breathe and laugh a little bit. And I think it's going to help us be a little bit more creative. And I loved it. My team we had so much fun with this little campaign. We even put it on social media and everywhere. And people just really loved it. So that's what I would say. Regenerate, like, where are you finding new inspiration for your creativity? And even if you're a tech team, you have to learn how to be creative. I know you're in numbers all day, you know, and programming and things like that, but creativity is everywhere. And we really need to learn how to spot it and how to, you know, gravitate towards more creative ideas together. And don't be afraid of someone else's creative idea. That's another one I really get on my team about. Don't, you know, if someone has a new idea, don't laugh at it, or, you know, don't, if it sounds ridiculous, let them share, because this is their moment. We respect them, right? Always comes down to that.
There's so much there. I always keep saying that because my job is to talk to people, but then pull out the gems, basically, mm-hmm. to allow other people to see where the creativity or the intercultural creativity aspects are coming up. And so one thing that you did say is that you love metaphor and analogy. And first of all, a lot of people think creativity is only artistry. So they're saying they're not creative because they're not excellent in the art. So we have to dispel that myth. You know, mm-hmm. artistry is part of it, but creative thinking, like problem finding, problem solving, really looking at novel ways of interacting with whatever you're dealing with. But using metaphor and analogy is a key creative skill because it takes for what you know, but it attaches it to the hidden, you know, the part of what you don't know or whatever the person that you're trying to explain it to. And there's a wonderful TED talk I highly recommend people watch is The Power of Analogy. And he talks about how the whole Ford, the Motor T car, mm-hmm. that whole system of the industrial revolution and how he got the idea from pulling from an analogy from going to like a meat packing plant, right? And so people's creative mind able to jump and make those connections, that's what we're really going to be looking for in this future of work. And really giving your tech team and giving staff who had really rich, heavy in the science and the tech, really helping them balance out that creative thinking, that metaphorical connection. That's going to be a big, big part as we move more into the AI landscape, right?
I love that. In fact, I'll share one more. This is a cute analogy. So my team was having a hard time. Well, I had some other folks who joined and they were just having a hard time understanding the process of onboarding a client. And so I would say, okay, listen, our business development / sales team, we are the fishermen, okay, and fishermen. So we go out and we'll catch a fish and that's a new client. So we catch this big fish. We've worked really hard to pull in this big fish, okay? Let's say it's a huge yellowfin tuna, okay? So we work really hard, we catch the fish, take it off the hook. Now we hand it over to our account manager, who then is the chef. And the chef takes that big fish. And with the automation team or the internal product development team, they fix up a really, really, really great meal. So this client goes from being caught to then full service, having all their needs met, right? So it's like I catch the fish and you now have to cook it. You have to clean it. You have to make sure, clean the data, right? You have to clean it. You have to make sure it is ready for its final course. And so when I said that, they were like, ooh, like light bulbs went off and they were like, oh, wow. Okay. So
yeah,
good job. But I said, but it gets messy when the fisherwoman has to go into the kitchen and check on the fish.
Yes, and chop up the onions. Like, that's not part of my...
That is not supposed to be my job. Even though I'm happy to come in and check and taste a few things, make sure they're good, right? I'll do quality control, make sure once in a while. But I want you to know that that is your ownership. You should own that and do it so well at such a high level of excellence that you should never be afraid if that fisherman comes in to check to see how that fish is going. So I said, not that I'm putting any pressure on you, but I want them to have this drive to be their own leader. I tell all my staff, I don't care if you're the face of the company or you're the person who loves to be behind the computer and never seen, as a senior data scientist or programmer, you're a leader. All of us are leaders. So you have ownership. Believe me, you have ownership and you need to act that way. So this company is a representative of you and me. We represent it. All of us represent this company. So it's good. I mean, that analogy kind of helped really bring it home for my team. But yeah, analogies are powerful. It connects the familiar with the unfamiliar. It helps the idea to come full circle. And that's what I love about metaphors or analogies. I think they're very powerful.
And they're more needed than people might think, So my job is to bring some of these skills to the forefront and to really tool people up in areas that they didn't know that they needed to be tooled up in. So yes, like you're talking about your emotional intelligence, which includes emotional granularity, emotional regulation, right? Being able to control your own emotions, but being sensitive to the emotional climate, basically, of a situation. But what I love from that example, what you showed me very well, is great leaders, which, like you said, everyone's a leader, their own sphere, their own space. You are the CEO of you for sure, right? But a great leader that's over a team of people can be sensitive enough to do that on the fly. That's a skill that one needs to practice. And, we haven't really talked too much about my work off camera, but one of its neurosomatic creativity, like bringing in the connection between the brain, the mind, and the body. I use a method of using the arts to do so people can be more creative within their whole self. And bringing in the arts, like bringing in theater, improvisation, that really gives people the practice to do what you just did, like right on the fly. Like, okay, your brain needs to understand the process of onboarding and then parallel it with the process of something else that you hope they already have a cognitive construction of, right? Because if no one's ever really been fishing or whatever, they may not be able to parallel it very well. Mm-hmm. At least the concept of fishing, right? You don't just get the fish out of the lake and just eat it right there. Which we were at a lake yesterday, so we saw a few catfish coming out the water, like, oh my goodness. But, you know, I'm telling people that metaphors and analogies and storytelling, how to really insert it very well on the fly, that's not just for pastors, poets, and prophets. That's for leaders, especially in this time where we need to lead people well and in a very unstable, fluctuating environment.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Absolutely. I always feel like the most, again, like when it comes down, I may not be the smartest person scientifically in the room, but whenever I'm trying to convey a message, I try to always think, again, like I said at the beginning, it's always about people. And so I always try to bring it home with a story that is a very human story. Like, for example, when I was speaking at that conference 3 weeks ago, the pharma conference in Boston, I was sharing about the AI, the really all the great things we're doing with our AI automation for clinical trials. You know, of course, the big numbers are quite powerful, the percentages of time and cost savings, et cetera. But you can say all that, but then at the end, I said, what really is going to change your life is what changed my friend's life. When 2 years ago, I spoke at a medical writing conference, and I was the only person there speaking about AI automation. And I did not know I was going to be the only AI speaker, but I was in a room of over 300 medical writers. And I kept talking about, you know, how AI automation is going to write patient narratives and tables, listings, and figures and clinical study reports. And these medical writers literally looked at me like I was their mortal enemy. Wow. Like I just cut off their arms and they were going to come after me, you know. And I said three different times in my talk, no, this is your AI medical writing assistant. It's going to help you. And I didn't know if I'd won over anyone that day. It was, I went off, no one hardly clapped. I was like,
oh, wow, to be a fly in the room.
So I walk off the stage, and right afterwards, this gentleman, older gentleman, comes right down the side aisle towards me. And I'm like, oh, here we go. Here we go. I'm going to get reamed, you know, or drilled for whatever I said. And he comes towards me and he has glasses on, and all of a sudden his glasses fog up and he just has tears streaming down his face. And I said, sir, are you okay? And he said, Jennifer, I wish I would have met you 10 years ago. He said, because if I would have had this automation software, I would have been able to go to more ballet recitals, more soccer games, and I would have seen so many more patients healed. And I just, in that moment, I realized, I'm like, this is why I'm here. This is why I'm here. I'm not here to prove how smart I am or to, you know, spout off numbers. I'm here to touch the human heart. And he got it. And in that moment, when I shared this story 3 weeks ago in Boston, I closed with it. And it was like people, it was this big aha moment. They were like, wow, like this is why. This is why this is going to help us. And, you know, and that's what I always want to tell leaders and people in. Everyone's a leader in their own area, right? Like you said, in their own sphere, everyone has a leadership over others. And when you get a moment to just put your task list down for a second, because I know I love a list. I like checking off my list.
My lists have lists.
Yeah. And I get so busy in my day. And sometimes I just hear this voice in me saying, you know what? Pause, just press pause for a second, focus on this person because they need you. And I have some team members who are in the Middle East right now. And this week, you know, with all that's happening in Israel and around the Mediterranean, I just felt like this last week, I said, you know what? I've got a lot to get done, but it doesn't matter right now. I'm going to call this team member And I'm going to have a one-on-one with them because they are so much more important. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I just wanted them to know we're with you. You know, we're thinking of you. We're praying for you. If you need anything, please let us know, you know, and it meant more to them. And it was interesting. One of the guys on my team, he actually choked up because he was like, wow, this is the first time an employer's ever done this.
Yeah.
And I was like, really?
You have a journal somewhere where you're recording these because these are your nuggets. Seriously. I think that's where I come from, a faith background. So I always say, you know, this is where God has planted me, but it's this shift of, I'm not sure how old you are. I was born in 79. So it's just like, you know, the 80s and profit mm-hmm. and growth over growth over growth over growth year over year. And just workers are cogs in a machine, more or less. Of course, I'm over generalizing. But because we're in this not VUCA environment, volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous, but they're calling it a BANI environment, mm-hmm. brittle. Yeah, brittle, anxious, nonlinear, and incomprehensible. So like I keep saying, we're in this huge, just nonlinear environment. And so the leaders that really know how to connect and build trust, mm-hmm. right? We did a training at a medical center in Boston, 500 leaders in person with Legos, pipe cleaner. Great. But really getting them interacting on how do I build trust within my team? What's going on in the brain? And people think they have to have these long 5-hour conversations, but it's like tidbits. Like it's almost like interest, like it compounds, right? Mm-hmm. In that meeting, in that phone call, in that eye contact, in that small note, right? No one leaves notes anymore. Who puts a note in the mail?
Mm-hmm. I know. It's unheard of. And I still love it when I get a card in the mail. I'm like, what? You know, like that takes a lot of effort nowadays just to get a card, you know? And that's why I get the 99-cent ones at Trader Joe's. It's like they're just cheaper and easier. But even just taking the time, writing a note, putting a stamp on it and sending it in the mail. I mean, that's unheard of.
Yeah. But it means so much. And it's when it's so easy to send an email or send a text. Yeah, just that extra effort. But we're looking at, you know, the story that I shared in Boston was like, for some reason, I was there when the Boston bombing happened. Mm-hmm. And I was there as a school teacher, you know, doing a program with the superintendent there at the time. But then I was there 10 years later doing a training with adults at the medical center. And I told them, you know, building trust, that happens years before the crisis comes. Like you don't start building trust with your team and you have a crisis on your hand. You know, it's kind of like the whole quote with Abraham Lincoln. If you give me 6 hours to cut down a tree, I'm going to spend 4 hours sharpening my axe. Mm-hmm. Like the building trust is the sharpening the axe. So when you're ready to cut down that tree, you're all tooled up and ready to go. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's really good. That's really good, Janine. Thank you. Awesome.
So we are the gems. And so I will need your address because I do send gems.
Really? That is so cool.
Yeah. Yes. Well, kind of like what you're saying with the stories. That's why I said, I hope you're jotting these stories down because these are your gems. But we believe in metaphor. The brain just works better with metaphor and props. So I do have mm-hmm. to have a brain. And our whole metaphor is around the diamond. Everyone's meant to shine bright. We're multifaceted. The Prismatic Leadership Program is prism actually shows the hidden colors within the light. And so great leaders know how to pull out the hidden gifts of their team members. And there's just so much there. But I like to have our guests end with a gem about just what they want to leave with the audience. So I should put that in the type form thing you fill out just to give you a heads up.
That's okay. That's totally fine. Thank you. I love that. I think it's a beautiful, again, another beautiful analogy, the gem and how you're right. And sometimes the greatest imperfections can show more light. And I think that's beautiful. So I think that's something I'm going to end with is don't, again, like, you know, I kind of laugh about it because I was that little kid who struggled in math and science, who kind of always limited what I thought I could do in that area. But I tell everyone I talk to now, I said, listen, don't underestimate your potential and don't overlook your mistakes. Mm-hmm. I think they're your pitfalls, your weaknesses. I've made a lot. I mean, I've made so many mistakes in my life. And I think we all have at different times, but learn from them. You know, learn from those mistakes. Let that be the beautiful color that shines through you. Because, you know, my husband and I, we talk a lot about how if we had not gone through difficult times in our lives or made different mistakes, we wouldn't then have so much experience to speak from and impart to others. And so, again, I'm a person of faith, but I always say, God never wastes anything in your life, good or bad. So he can use the good and he can use the bad to encourage others. And, you know, whether it's encouraging a loved one, a neighbor, or a coworker, I mean, right now, our whole world needs encouragement desperately. So I think let's not overlook those moments in the grocery store, standing next to someone. I think we're all on our phones too much. I am. We used to stand in the bank line, right, before digital banking, and we'd be daydreaming or talking to the person in front of us and make a new friend. So I think we have forgotten the art of how to build friendships and relationships and talk to others around us. So that's what I encourage people to keep doing. Don't, you know, as much as I love AI, I think it's fun. I think it's a great tool. Don't forget people. We always need people. And I think that's how we're going to make a difference, is if we don't forget those around us.
Beautifully said, beautifully said. So if people did want to find more about your businesses or where they can find you to continue to glean wisdom from you, where should they go?
Yeah, they can just go to Narrativa, NARRATIVA.com. And my profile's on there and on our leadership page and my LinkedIn. So you can just go straight there to my LinkedIn. And yeah, and I usually post on LinkedIn where I'm going to be speaking and some of our newest product developments and kind of new exciting announcements. So yeah, if people want to connect on LinkedIn, that's a great way.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing your time. Thank you, audience, for listening. I hope you gathered a few gems of your own. And don't forget to go and create and grow. And we'll see you next time. Thank you so much for joining us at the Create and Grow podcast. We hope that you obtain some amazing gems and are able to learn the various ways you are creative and how we can be more creative when we work together. If you wish to learn more about our organizational training programs and professional development for companies, organizations, schools, and districts, visit cafestrategies.com. That's C-A-F-F-E strategies.com. This is where we have amazing keynote speakers and certified facilitators on board to help your organization learn how to develop leaders with the unique prismatic leadership method. We also have groundbreaking book titles in our online bookstore that lay out the seven gems of intercultural creativity, as well as our inner child books that inspire the innate creative ability of our little ones and you too. Our team thanks you once again for joining us on the Create and Grow podcast. And remember to shine bright like a diamond. See you next time.